Today on the Andrew Cooperrider Show, I had a listener question asking me to define the difference between establishment and non-establishment politicians. You hear me throw that term around. And he had asked me, can you please define that in a way that makes sense outside of just voting records? Because it can be hard to figure out just on voting records who is establishment, who's not. So I will strive to do that today. And you could have your question answered as well. If you want to head on over to theandrewshow.com, you can click the contact tab. That'll take you right to a contact form where you can fill it out and send it on over to me. Or you can also email info@theandrewshow.com. Once again, that's info@theandrewshow.com. So today we'll work on how to identify, how to know if you're dealing with someone who you shouldn't support, or the establishment, or the liberal Republican, or not. And we have a great example for this. We have District 50. Andy Stone, who's running against Candy Massaroni there. Candy Massaroni is the incumbent. And Andy Stone's had an ad that came across my Facebook that makes it clear he's not particularly conservative. We'll play that for him, be able to break it down so you can see. He provides us that perfect example of how to better tell whether or not somebody is with us, against us. Is somebody a liberal Republican, a conservative Republican? Is someone establishment, non-establishment? So we'll go through that, and we'll have all that and more today on the Andrew Cooperrider Show. But first, Daniel Cameron is firing up a PAC within the state, which tells us a few things. One, of course, he isn't done with politics. That Daniel Cameron wants to make a run for something else. What could that be? There's a lot of choices, obviously, before Cameron. He could run for Senator Mitch McConnell's seat. Mitch McConnell is retiring, quote unquote. That seat should open up in 2026. I don't believe McConnell's running again, so he could take a run at that. He could, of course, take a run at governor in 2027. That will be an open seat and a new primary to shake out. Or he could perhaps try for a congressional seat, as it's pretty clear that Andy Barr will be making a run at senator in this state for Mitch McConnell's seat. So that will open up that congressional seat, and then Cameron could potentially be eyeing up that seat. So questions surround about what he thinks his political future is, but Cameron clearly isn't done with politics if he's firing up a PAC that in this case specifically is meant to support inter-Kentucky candidates. And that's really key, because if he's firing up a PAC to support candidates all across the nation, that'd tell you he's probably looking at maybe more one of those federal offices, or at least he's just trying to grow his political profile nationally to go on and become, whether that's a consultant or, you know, he's the face of an organization now, the president of an activist organization. PAC now is what he's doing. And so if he's just trying to raise that profile, open up more opportunities for him, he could be looking at doing a national PAC. But he says he's looking to specifically support inter-Kentucky candidates, which tells you he's trying to build up and curry more favor with certain Republican actors in order to support him moving forward. And the question will come down to, who does he look at supporting? I mean, Daniel Cameron, the thing about Cameron, okay, is seeing who he supports will let us lay bare who Cameron is and what he actually is about. Now, we know Daniel Cameron is the type of person that wants to be in office. He's a politician, a career politician. That's been his goal. But what's he actually support? What's his goals? Well, when it comes to who he supports, I think it can send us a pretty clear message, because Cameron did a pretty good job of being as wishy-washy as possible, of not trying to offend anybody amongst any faction within the Republican Party, to basically be as palatable as he could for every single quote-unquote Republican faction. So he wasn't necessarily catty-cornered into, you know, a Liberty Republican or a conservative Republican or a liberal Republican or an establishment Republican. Instead, he had more choices before him. But that's probably also why he lost, that desire to not want to offend anybody. So therefore, I'm not going to tell you what I stand for, what I believe in, what I want to see accomplished, is probably why Beshear won. Because Daniel Cameron, in my opinion, refused to say anything of substance. He was afraid to offend anybody. You go to, you know, when you're running against an incumbent, you want to be pointing out not just some, you know, hot button key small things that we all know the current governor is doing, especially things currently, you know, reminding us about things the governor is doing. Running nothing but ads to remind us that Beshear vetoed right to life legislation. We know Beshear isn't pro-life, or running ads to remind us that Beshear did COVID. Like, we all lived through it. We've all dealt with it. But bringing new things to light and also painting a picture for how you will govern. And I think that's something Cameron did not do well, because Cameron, I could not tell you to this day exactly what a Cameron governorship would look like. What would he accomplish? What would he get done? And the fact that he wouldn't lay out clear, concrete things to make it clear what his government philosophy was, what improvements he would make directly over Beshear instead of just ones that are just kind of generalized. The fact he wouldn't do that, I think, is why he couldn't rally enough support to him. So by seeing who he supports with this pack, it paints the picture clearly for us who Daniel Cameron is. And it will be interesting to see how much Republicans into the future do actually support him as he makes a run at his next thing. Now, to my viewer question. So this was sent in to our, I think, emailed us. So you can email us too, info@theandrewshow.com. Again, you can also theandrewshow.com. And this comes from Robert. Robert said, "Hey, Andrew, on your show and in your tweets, you talk about establishment and non-establishment of the Republican Party. What are some factors that allow you to place a public servant in one camp or the other? For example, a representative takes the stance of siding with no con law reform establishment, but on another bill, that same person is pushing for work requirements for state aid, more non-establishment." And so I want to answer your question, Robert, and I want to zero in on it. And so first, establishment versus non-establishment. You shouldn't confuse this with terms like Rhino or liberal Republican versus conservative Republican, because you do have Democrat establishment. And when the establishment comes together to, quote unquote, find solutions, that's when we start to get what a lot of people affectionately call the uniparty. Now, when you start talking about the Republican establishment, you can now use terms like liberal Republican or not very conservative Republican. And some people like to use Rhino. I don't particularly use that term as much. I like liberal Republican. I think that better paints the picture of who they are. But that liberal Republican and Republican establishment are pretty much synonymous. And I'll go over why they are basically the same thing here in a bit. But what it really has to deal with is a saying that I think really kind of encapsulates the way with how people think about government. And that, I think, personally, is what the difference is between establishment and non-establishment. Objectively speaking, why are you there? Are you there to help people? Are you there because you just feel a real big calling to serve your community? Or are you there because you want to be a politician? What's your history? How'd you get there? And then how do you think about politics? And there's no greater allegory that people use that really points to what the problem is than talking about how the sausage gets made. So we'll go over that allegory and how that kind of relates to this after this short break. You're listening to The Andrew Kubrater Show, your source for Kentucky politics. And you're back with the Andrew Kubrater Show. So stay in politics for any length of time. Stay around politicians for longer than a few minutes. Listen to more than a couple of podcasts. And you might hear them talk about how the sausage gets made. People say all the time, well, people don't want to see how the sausage gets made, or that's just how the sausage gets made. And it's ugly and people, it's gross and people don't want to see it. And that's the point of the allegory, is that sausage making is apparently gross and disgusting to watch, and you want to eat sausage, but maybe you never want to see the sausage getting made, because that would then turn you off from eating the sausage. And that would mean, though, in this way people like to use, you know, popular commentators, people at the national level. I'll listen to, for an example, like Ben Shapiro at times, Matt Walsh at times. And Ben Shapiro often will talk about this, where he talks about how the sausage has got to get made. Or people will talk about Mitch McConnell this way, and they'll say, Mitch McConnell is really good at getting the sausage made. But calling it that, calling politics that, the sausage in this case is getting our government to quote-unquote function, I guess. Getting the government to quote-unquote work. And I'm using their terms, their very nice terms, to try to describe this. Getting government to operate, that's their sausage, okay? But the implication here is that if we saw how our government works and how our government operates, and we see how deals get done, we would be absolutely disgusted by it and dissatisfied with what we're eating, or in this case, with our government. Now, let me ask you, though. Who in that parable of sausage getting made, who doesn't want you to see the sausage getting made? Is it the consumer? If I walk up to the consumer on the street, or person eating sausage, and I say, hey, I know it sounds weird, but hey, do you want to see how this gets made? Would they immediately be like, ew, no, gross? No, of course not. Most people would say, yeah, sure, that sounds cool. Let's go tour a sausage factory. But it's the maker of the sausage that doesn't want you to see how it gets made, because if you saw how it would be getting, if you saw how it was made, you wouldn't want to eat it. You'd find it disgusting and gross. And so the establishment, in that way, they like to elect people who believe in secrecy. The establishment are people who believe in secrecy and that believe in politics being a game, not about any principle at all. Not about achieving certain goals, but that government needs to function, quote unquote, putting that in quotations, because what does function mean, right? Because people would claim, oh, we're getting things done when we pass billions of dollars in foreign aid, but that's not exactly getting the kinds of things done I want to see get done. I don't know about you, but you know, to claim that, hey, we just got to get these things done so government can, of course, function, because government has to function. They're saying that they recognize themselves, that they're somehow better or superior by making government, by making sausage hidden from the people. Those people will go on, they'll lament Twitter, they'll lament social media and people talking on it. They won't like citizens getting involved. That's why a lot of these more establishment politicians are quitting on both sides of the aisle. People have been there for a while, because they've been left alone to make their sausage in silence without anybody looking. And now that they're being exposed for what they're doing, how, quote unquote, it gets made, people are suddenly saying, I don't want to eat that. I don't particularly like what you're making there now. And they're flabbergasted by that. They say, don't you just want to live your life and let us do our job and you do your job? Just trust your life, your government, your laws to us. Just trust it to us. You don't need to be paying attention to what's going on over here, but people are paying attention, and they don't like what they're seeing. And so you'll hear these establishment liberal, and if they're on the Republican side, I think liberal Republicans, you'll start to hear buzzwords. Like things like, we're the ones getting things done. We want to support people who want to get things accomplished. We actually have a clip from Damon Thayer. This is interesting. So he's the outgoing Senate Majority Leader here in Kentucky. He's clearly keying up his future in politics. And on KET, he had a little outtake that KET posted I want to play for you that really illustrates a lot of the thought process of these establishment folks. Let's take a listen.
I'm going to be a little more outspoken in some of these primaries coming up next month.
How so? And for whom?
For normal Republicans.
What is a normal Republican, sir?
Someone who wants to help put the fire out that's burning in America today.
Do you believe there are abnormal Republicans?
I believe there are members of both parties on the fringes who would rather pour gas on the flames and walk away and run to their Twitter feeds or to CNN or to Fox News to talk about it and brag about it gleefully. And, you know, that's not me.
So that was Damon Thayer, KET, talking about these Republicans that want to throw gas on the fire. And I'll return to the whole burn it down, putting gas on the fire thing in a bit. But the comments of, oh, they want to run to social media or Fox, or they want to go there instead of help put out the fire. What he's saying is they will go and tattletale on us for what we're doing and not be a part of this secret behind closed doors government process. Because, of course, government needs to work, quote unquote, for you, the people. And this becomes more obvious as Thayer says, oh, well, they just want to burn it all down. They just want to throw more gas on the fire, to which the comment comes out of, what are they burning down? What fire is raging that they're throwing gas on? I mean, if a house is a crumbling cesspool, absolutely infected with termites, rotting, empty, falling in on itself, condemned, and then it catches fire, what do you do? Do you burn it all down or do you try to put the fire out? So the claim he's really making isn't that, oh, these people just want to destroy what we've built. They're saying that they want to destroy what we, the establishment, has built. Not we as a country has built, but what we as the establishment has built. And we do. We view it, the more conservative, non-establishment Republicans that I count myself as a member of, we view that house not as a pristine mansion, but as something that's infected and needs to be brought down. And using the foundations of our Constitution and using the foundations of our government, build back something that is much smaller, more in line with how much we can actually afford, because our mortgage has gotten out of control here. Build back something that is much smaller, much more aligned with what we need. But that means things have to be removed. And, you know, a great example of this that I'm sure Thayer would say, these are people that just want to burn it down. You know, Thayer agrees with the idea that the horse park should have a monopoly on gambling and that any dollar spent needs to be spent through them. Now, he can't tell you exactly why from some principled standpoint. You can't say, what about that makes good government? What about that is working for the people? Now, he may say, well, it works for the people is that we've got to protect Kentucky's key industry. These horse parks, they must be protected. And if they don't have this gambling monopoly, these horse parks will just come crumbling down to the ground without this. He may try to claim that. That has yet to be exactly seen, per se. Now, I find that claim that these horse tracks will suddenly shut down, remember, not the horse farms, but the horse tracks, because that's who benefits from the gambling, are suddenly going to shut down when in 2024, Churchill Downs achieved a record $2.5 billion in net revenue, a 30% increase from the previous year, and net income experienced a 5% decrease to $417 million in 2023 to $439 million in 2022. So even during the tail end of COVID, their net income was almost $500 million. And now with gambling in play, they're now expected to achieve upwards of $1 billion. So the claim that, oh, if they don't have this monopoly, they're just going to close up and this will be awful for Kentucky. We need to, sports betting couldn't have been handled by anybody other than the horse parks. And the horse parks need it, because if they don't get it, they're not going to be profitable. They're going to shut down. It's going to destroy Kentucky's economy. It makes no sense when they're making $500 million in profit, just Churchill Downs, without it. Why couldn't that have been expanded out? And so Damon Thayer is the type to say, no, that needs to be put in place. But the non-establishment Republicans would either say, some of them believe they should end gambling. And that could be one thought, is that, hey, we just need to end gambling at all, government-sanctioned gambling. Or the group could say, look, we need to end the government monopoly on gambling. And that could be people saying, look, this is corrupt, is all get out. That certain people designated by the government get to make money off this gambling thing, and no one else can. That's wrong. That needs to stop. So we need to end this monopoly, to which Thayer would say, you just want to burn it all down. To which, well, yeah, we kind of do want to burn down the government monopoly on gambling one way or another. It's a bad thing. It's bad for the people. It's wrong. It's corrupt. You say that's burning it all down like it's a good thing. I'm saying that's burning it all down because it's infested with parasites. So how do we tell the difference? Establishment, non-establishment, how do we go through that? Well, we'll be going over that after this short break. You listen to The Andrew Kubrater Show, your source for Kentucky politics. And you're back with The Andrew Kubrater Show. So I've been working through your question. What's establishment versus non-establishment? How do you define that as? And the best way to define that as establishment versus non-establishment is those who want to do it in the dark, those who believe it should be hidden from government. Government should be hidden from the people, how it operates. And those who believe it should be transparent and open and the people's voice be heard and gets to weigh in on. And when you want to do things secretly, and then those who want to represent the will of the people before them, you call them the obstructionist, crazy, fringe Republicans. Well, that's a pretty good indication. Well, fringe actors, that's a good indication. Now, when you get over to the Republican Party, a liberal Republican, an establishment Republican become almost synonymous. And there's a reason why here. Let's take a little look at the Democrat Party history. Democrats have shifted so far to the left that's pushing more and more people into the Republican camp. But they're not actually changing these voters. Well, these voters are somewhat changing as they come over, and they could be recognizing just how crazy and far left the Democrats are. It's not the voters that aren't changing, but as the Democrat Party shifts farther left and more people come into Republican camp, it's making it clear that other areas are becoming more red and that Republicans are getting more opportunities in areas they didn't before. And this is very interesting when you come across individuals who are the types of people that always wanted to be in office when they are in that situation. Because when you're somebody who has a young kid, you want to be a politician, you want to be in office, you wanted to run for election, you wanted to win something, a seat. When you're that type of person, you will do and say, you will change your beliefs around anything you need to say in order to get into office. But that doesn't change how you'll actually operate once in office. Because once you're in office, because you never had principles to begin with, you just wanted to say and do whatever you needed to get elected. Once you're in office, those people who are also that are the establishment in place will wrap their arm around you and show you the way and give you the money and everything else. And that pushes you over to the side. And so if you are the kid that just want to be a politician and you're in an area with a lot of Republicans, well, you just become an R. And what you'll especially run into for these kids, if they grew up, this is fascinating when you look at Eastern Kentucky politicians. If they grew up in a blue area that's now become red because the Democrat Party has gone so crazy to the left, they have never changed their beliefs. A lot of the Eastern Kentucky Republicans, elected Republicans, are exactly the same as the Democrats were from 20 years ago. All they did was switch from a D to an R because that's what they had to do now to get elected because the Democrat Party has lost its mind. And then if you have an R that lives in a more liberal area that either suddenly shifts, or you have an R that's based out of a liberal area like Andy Barr, for example, he lives in Lexington, that has a greater out district that they cover. So it's maybe more safer red, but that's still somewhat liberal. Well, they start to emulate some of the liberal tendencies, the Democrat tendencies, because they, quote unquote, just want to win elections. That's all they care about. They just want to win elections. They just want to be in office. And so if they're worried about, oh, my greatest challenger is a Democrat, if that's what they believe their greatest challenger is, guess what they will do? They will become more like a Democrat in order to pick up the would-be voters that they worry might vote against them. And so if they believe that I need to stay in office because that's how I get my value, that's what means to me, I will change whatever I need to change. And with Kentucky having gone through this massive political shift within the last 10 years, relatively recently, it is really shining through when we look at a lot of our state-level elected people. But there's something that the individuals that are coming from priorly blue areas that are now red, and areas coming from liberal blue areas that, for whatever reason, get elected, and that is that they both just want to be in government. And once they're in government, they're not going to want to end things. They're not going to want to abolish a department, lower spending, tax you less. They don't want to do less. They don't want government to do less because then they would have less power. That's not acceptable to them. They got into government to feel important. And if they end all the things that they're doing, well, then they won't be able to have more power. They won't be as important or as powerful. So if government doesn't do as much as it needs to, then, well, why do you need me? Now, how do you tell the difference on these people? And you can normally tell based on how they came up in politics, if they're going to be establishment, they're going to let you down or not. Not always, but you can normally tell. And the number one way to tell of how they came up without actually seeing their voting record is to see how they talk about things. So if they had a long history in politics, and if they are individuals with that don't have an accessible voting record, or they have a voting record that leaves you questioning, they've been in politics for a while, the best way you can tell is how they talk about things. Now, when you're talking to a currently elected person and you ask them a question about why they voted a certain way, if they give you a talking point that doesn't make much sense, that tells you they're probably a little bit more of an establishment Republican, because that talking point was given to them by the leadership in the chambers. Whenever the leadership in the chambers goes ahead and passes something or fails to pass something, they do come up with a talking point for anybody in their chamber to follow. And they will repeat this, the House reps, the state senators, they will repeat this ad nauseum when you ask them about why they voted a certain way. And it'll fall right in line with what you see on Twitter or Facebook that the House leadership or Senate leadership is posting. It'll fall right in line. That's a good indication. But paying attention to how they talk about things and the vocabulary they choose. And I have a really good example for this when we look at the candidate for District 50 running against Candy Massaroni, Andy Stone. Now, Andy Stone is on my radar for today's show for really one reason. I saw an ad of his on my Facebook. It came across as a sponsored ad on my Facebook, which, one note to Andy Stone, you're spending your money all wrong if I'm getting your Facebook ads. You need to kick out your advisor. You need to kick out your campaign consultant and get a new one. I don't live anywhere near District 50. And the fact that, and I haven't searched anything in Bardstown or Nelson County, that's District 50. I haven't done anything in that area recently. And so if I'm getting your Facebook ads, your targeting is all wrong. I shouldn't be seeing your Facebook ads. It wasn't just me seeing them. I was looking at comments from people who I know that don't live in District 50, meaning they're getting the targeted ad. So that tells you already that they're not running an efficient ship. That tells you how they probably run government, right? But anyways, but the ad came across my timeline because it was a sponsored advertisement. And I happen to know that he's running against Candy Massaroni. And full disclosure, you know, Candy Massaroni, I like as a representative. She's honest, straightforward. She's got a good voting record, in my opinion. Communicative with the grassroots about issues. So she is somebody that I view as pretty solid. And I was curious what Andy Stone's reasons were for running against her. Why should we vote her out? And so when I saw the ad come across, I'm like, I wonder what Andy Stone's argument is about how he would do better. And you might expect that he would be putting out a very conservative ad, letting you know that he's even more conservative somehow than Candy Massaroni is. I don't know if that's quite possible. But somehow he's figured out a way to be more conservative than Candy Massaroni. He's going to be even better representative for the people. You'd think that's what the ad would be, but you would be mistaken. We're going to listen to Andy Stone's ad, hear what he has to say, and point out how the way he talks about things points us that he's not very conservative. We'll have that after this short break. And you're back with the Andrew and Cooperator Show. So before the break, I was setting up an example, perfect example of how to tell if somebody is a liberal Republican or not. Are they conservative or are they somebody you should support or not? And for today's example, we have Andy Stone, candidate for House District 50. I want to play for you an ad that came across my Facebook, sponsored ad he sent to me. And let's take a listen. Let's see if you can pick up all the problems with this ad that I had. Here you go.
Hello, everyone. I'm Andy Stone. I've been a board member for 12 years on the Bardstown School District and chairman of the board twice. I can tell you that I'm as proud as I can be of all the administrators and educators across this great county and the wonderful job they do on a day-to-day basis. I'm very proud of the work they do, but no system is perfect, and we certainly have areas in education that we need to improve upon, including we need to improve our kindergarten readiness rates above the 50 percentile. Currently, only 1 in 2 children are adequately prepared when they arrive for their very first day of kindergarten. We need to improve our literacy and math skills through access to affordable, high-quality early learning. We need to recruit and retain high-quality educators through higher starting wages and incentivizing higher educational goals. We need to emphasize that college is not for everyone, and therefore we need to promote technical and skilled trade certifications. We need to strengthen, not eliminate, our stance on supporting social emotional learning. My time as a board member has been filled with wonderful examples of student successes from pre-K to their high school graduation. Our commitment to helping those in need, students with gap score issues, troubled students, and grief counseling during times of hardship have really galvanized my commitment to education. Let's stand strong as a county and a district for all students, regardless of their district, to instill unity in our community so all students have the opportunity to excel and prosper.
Now, for those of you, none of you can see it because it's all audio listeners, so none of you can see the ad. And so all you heard was the audio. And with the audio you heard, you would never know this guy is running for state house representative. He sounds like he is a Democrat running for re-election or election to the school board. He doesn't sound like somebody running for state house rep. So that's the first issue I have. What is this ad for? Who's it for? Because it's not very clear what you're even running for in the first place. Now, putting that to the side, let's pretend you do know Andy Stone is running for state house rep. You do know what this ad is supposed to be pushing you to vote for him in a Republican primary over Candy Massaroni. Well, there's a few things he said in the ad that tell us right away this is a no-go. This is a no vote. This person is clearly not very conservative. Not, if he is a Republican, he's a liberal one. That's for sure. So let's talk about one of the things he talked about. He talks about social emotional learning. Now you'll notice he didn't say SEL, right? Because if he said SEL, you might pick up on it. But he said social emotional learning. Not we should be promoting it, not eliminating it. Now social emotional learning, as well as another thing he pointed at was he said one of the things that has galvanized his commitment to public education is grief counselors, which kids, if they need a grief counselor, I feel awful for them. They should absolutely get one. And their parents should go see a therapist for that. And that'd be a great reason to galvanize your support for, like, therapy, grief counselors. But social emotional learning and grief counselors shouldn't be a galvanizing issue in education. This is why our schools are becoming endless black pits of money. Because we keep dumping more and more and more money into these schools. And instead of spending them to teach kids to read and write and do math, we're spending them on grief counselors and social emotional learning teachers. That's the kind of thing liberals are pushing. Good conservatives coming along should be able to recognize that this is a waste, that we're spending way too much money on these things. And not only that, it's not good for kids. It's not good for kids to talk about their feelings all the time. They need to be kids, right? They're almost basically, anybody who's had a three-year-old can tell you, or a six-year-old or a seven-year-old or a 10-year-old. Really not until they get to middle school. They're essentially just monsters with feelings that pull them in a direction or another, and it's your job to tame the monster as their parent. And it's the school's job to educate them, not to have them sit around and talk about their feelings. They don't even know what they're feeling, they're kids. So that's one of the issues. We see right away, grief counselors, SEL, spend more money on it. That's government's role, grief counselors for your kids at government-forced education centers. That sounds great. The other thing he talked about was he talked about universal pre-K. Now, he didn't come out and say universal pre-K because that's a Beshear talking point and he can't come out and say that. So instead, he says low cost, affordable, equal access to early education, pre-K education, which is universal pre-K. What he's pushing is universal pre-K. And that's where you got to pay attention to the words. He won't say SEL because that's a buzzword. So instead, he says social emotional learning. He's talking about grief counselors in the school. That should tell you, oh, this guy doesn't know what the rule of a school should be. He's talking about universal pre-K for kids. He's talking about an expansion of government and an usurping of parents and kids' lives. Another indicator here, he's a longtime politician. Talked about his extensive experience on the school board. That should be something that we're addressing. Any longtime politician, immediately you should be suspicious of. He was involved with the schools, yet he isn't talking about how they do too much and spend too much. So if you have a Republican cutting an ad about schools, and nowhere along the lines are they like, look, we need to stop spending so much money on administrators. We need to stop spending money on all these things that have nothing to do with your kids learning to read, write, and do math. And they don't talk about that at all in their educational spiel. Don't vote for them. They're a problem. And as further evidence that he's maybe not very conservative, we have this from a candidate forum that happened recently with Candy Massaroni and him. They were asked about gas tax. Would they be willing to raise? Should we raise the gas tax? That was the question. And you're going to hear Candy's answer and then Andy Stone's answer. Let's give it a listen.
I'm not in agreement with raising any taxes, as people are already struggling in the General Assembly this session. We took some of the general funds, the excess general funds, and we gave the county a lot of money to fix some of the roads, even the county roads. So I think the excess money that we have, instead of holding it as a state, we do need a surplus in case of emergency, but I think the excess money should be used on roadways and infrastructure.
I agree with her in terms of, you know, there's some largesse in terms of funds that are left over that we could use and utilize on our road funds. At some point, however, I think the gas tax will probably have to go up because it is a consumptive tax.
So for those of you who missed it, what Candy Massaroni said there was she basically said the same thing all of us, I've said on the show a million times, is that two politicians, they may look at it as, this is the road fund, this is the general fund, this is the Sikh fund, this is the tobacco fund, this is the coal severance fund, this is this fund. They look at it as all these different funding sources, but all of it comes out of the taxpayer's pocket one way or the other. States' governments are not earning revenue. They don't earn profits. They take money out of your pocket one way or the other. And so the point is when we have a government that is spending, adjusted for inflation, 54% more than they did just 8 years ago, when we have a government that has a surplus, when we have a government in the process of lowering taxes, when we have a government that has so much waste to it, the idea of raising taxes should be unthinkable because it's all coming from the same taxpayer's pocket. But Andy Stone's response was, well, I think at some point we're going to have to raise the gas tax because, you know, we got to fund the roads. He said, we got to raise the gas tax because it is a consumption tax. Basically saying that, well, it's the only way the roads are funded, so we're going to have to raise that tax if we want to keep paying for our roads. And if you want to make an argument to raise the gas tax because you want to fund it through that direction, you better be cutting a lot of taxes elsewhere. But that's not what he said. He didn't say, we need to cut a bunch of taxes elsewhere and look at our road fund because that should come first. Nope, he didn't say that. He said, well, we're going to have to raise that gas tax at some point, you know, with all the other taxes we charge you with. But that one, too, we're going to have to raise you on that one, too. So that gives you hopefully the ability to look at and say, oh, outside of a voting record, outside of other indicators, just hearing how people talk, what they choose not to talk about, what they choose to talk about, how they talk about it, incredibly important. And I think it's very obvious when we look at somebody like Andy Stone, we look at his ad, we look at his statement on gas tax. It's very obvious he is not a conservative Republican. Well, y'all, that's what we have time for today on the Andrew Kuperow Show. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day.